In this episode, my mum and my dad will share about how they handled the crisis together as a couple. Hope you enjoy this special episode of this podcast. Hi, this is Cynthia. Thanks for listening in to episode 7 of my story. During my crisis, I'm often asked how my husband is coping with it all. My response is always, he has been the most amazing, loving husband supporting me all throughout my crisis. He deserves the Husband of the Year award. As we celebrate our 19th wedding anniversary today, I thought it would be great to have my husband KK here in the podcast to share his reflection on how we handled the crisis as a couple. Hi, dearest. Welcome to the podcast.
Yes, it's really good to be here. I'm really glad to be here.
Happy anniversary.
Oh, happy anniversary, dearest.
You know, our marriage vows were put to the test when one of us is sick. What role did you play in the early days of the crisis, and how did that change over time?
Well, I suppose in the early days of the crisis, I was really your seeing eyes, wasn't I? It's because you were visually impaired and couldn't see things. I had to really put myself in your shoes of how it would be like if I couldn't see things. So things like increasing the size of the font on your phone and finding out how to do that, working out how to work the audio functions on the phone, helping you around just to get to places. I mean, obviously you couldn't see, so you couldn't drive. I had to make sure that I was available to be able to drive you to medical appointments and to see the doctor and trips to the hospital. It's just especially going out, I think. Just walking out, going to the hospital, going to an unfamiliar place. Guiding you through all the steps, especially the steps. Those are the hardest. Yeah, and
very difficult.
Yeah,
everything I can't seem.
You couldn't tell the difference between. There was no depth perception at all. You couldn't tell, you know, whether there was a step there at all. So really, just being your eyes, really.
And also, we were receiving a lot of text messages as well.
The
early part of the crisis.
I think at this day and age, we receive a lot of, we communicate a lot with friends and people we know through text messages and emails, and we get a lot of text messages from everyone who wants to know what's going on, and they want to send a prayer or a word of encouragement. Yes. And a friend of mine was telling us, saying that, well, I wasn't even sure whether I should be texting because Cynthia can't read the text message that I was sending. So pretty much, I think, early part of the whole thing, I was really your secretary.
Yeah.
Just reading all the text messages that were coming through, and there were a lot of text messages that were coming through.
Yes, and you were helping me to respond.
Respond all on your phone to everyone who was sending you messages. Typing all those replies out.
And I guess when you were back at work, after that, then, you know, I had to replace the secretarial function with a virtual assistant. In my case, because I'm an Apple user, I started using Siri a lot more. How difficult was it to stand by seeing me all, you know, bruised up and swollen and physically weak after the major surgery, particularly?
Well, it was hard. It was just hard. And just seeing you with the sides of your face swollen and just seeing the bruises after the surgery, it was just hard. But, you know, I think as a guy, you tend to go through a whole doing mode. So you just get, you give yourself a list of things to do and say, all right, just make sure that, you know, that she gets enough of this, and or let's block out those dates because that's when she needs to go back to the hospital for a checkup. And yeah, you just give yourself a to-do list just to get through it all, and try not to think about it too much. But yeah, it was just hard just seeing you. Yeah, I don't think I would be able to get through it without just at least having God's presence in my heart.
Mm.
And that was the most important thing that needed to be there. To be able to be able to walk through it with you, and at least, you know, provide a source of encouragement and strength to you. Yeah, I really needed to have God in my heart first before I could do any of that.
Yeah, I think throughout especially the early part of the crisis, I just remember just the number of biblical verses and also some pictures you had, you know, to encourage me. So while I was in that surgery for a couple of hours, I remember you telling me that you were in this old beautiful church which is just next to the hospital.
The E&I hospital, it happens to be right next to St. Patrick's Cathedral in Melbourne, and it's a beautiful, beautiful building. We've passed it many times before, but never really found a time to go in.
Mm.
I remember the day of the surgery. I mean, the surgery was three to 4 hours long. Mm. I was told, and so I remember after they'd wheeled you in, just going out to the cathedral and going in there. It's really nice to find a sanctuary, a real God space to be able to sit down and just pray and just listen to God's Spirit just speak to you and just feel some peace come into you. Yeah, it's places like these are just so important.
I guess just what you just shared about having that, you know, God space and the sanctuary and God speaking to you. Did you feel that was one of the things that kept you together? You've always been so calm, dearest. Oh. I don't know how you do it. Because I am the complete opposite.
Oh, you're making me sound as if, like, you know, I'm just a very calm person in the relationship. But not calm all the time. Sometimes I just do lose it.
Mm.
But it's... I remember back in the early days, or especially when we were going through it, when I'd meet someone or someone who we know, a family friend or anyone, and they'll ask, "Oh, how is Cynthia doing?" And now I'd go through the list of, "Oh, okay, you know, she's gone through the surgery, and this and that happened, and that didn't work out too well, so now she's going through 10 rounds of radiotherapy, and we have a medical appointment on this date and this date, and we have to go back and forth on these days." And I remember just listening to myself and just thinking, wow, poor guy. just listening to myself. And
so
it was
sad. It sounded so sad.
Exactly. But you know, the reality of the situation, it really did not reflect the state of my heart. I just couldn't reconcile it, you know, of how I felt in my heart with what was happening around us. And the reason was because, you know, God really upheld me during that time. God's Spirit was lifting up our hearts at this time, and it's hard to explain this to someone who it's hard to explain this.
Yeah.
You know, when you say to someone, "Look, you know, we're going through all this, But God's been walking this through with us, and we've been getting signs from him, you know, just little signposts, assurances from him that he didn't, even in things that we really didn't need assuring, he would give us assurances anyway. He'd just send his word to us through friends, through text messages from other people, and they all say the same thing. You know, these people don't know, you know, each other, but they just send things, and or we encounter verses that just gel with what everybody else was saying. You know, his spirit was leading us. It was really speaking to us during this time, and that really helped lift our hearts, you know, throughout the whole journey.
Would you want to share about some of the pertinent verses shared about God's hand at work?
I remember there was one day we were driving to the hospital. I was driving you to the hospital for another appointment, and we were just talking about what was happening, and I remember telling you about this. I know this vision just popped into my head, and I remember telling you about it, and because we had just come back from India, and one of the things that we experienced in India was the streets in India, in Delhi. And as this is just crossing a street in Delhi, it's like there's just cars and rickshaws and cows and and bicycles and motorcycles, all I think the only word to describe it is swarming through the street in both directions, and
literally impossible. Literally to impossible. Cross.
Yeah, and we had to cross these this
street. For people who follow rules, that is.
Yeah, sometimes we have to cross these streets, and I remember God just gave me this same vision, this same vision that we had, you know, of us crossing this busy street.
Yes.
And the traffic was just going everywhere around us, but I just felt that there was a you know, I felt like a child being led by a parent.
Yes.
And a father.
Mm.
And I felt like God was the father, and he was holding us. He was holding us with his left hand. His left hand was in our hand was in his left hand. And his right hand was stretched out, you know, like just directing the traffic around us.
Yes.
You know, and he just telling us, all right, just stop here. Okay, move forward here. He was just directing the traffic as he was leading us through this busy street. And I remember telling you this, and we claimed it, and we said, yep. You know, that definitely is from God. And
it really spoke to me, that one.
Yeah,
because I felt that that picture was what we needed to visually trust and follow God's guidance amidst the chaos, amidst not knowing, you know. And the important thing was not run off on our own in some other direction, because he will get us there to the other side safely.
I remember when we got to the hospital, they were you were doing your treatment, and almost immediately we got a text message from our ex-life group leaders back in Malaysia, and it was this person had texted Isaiah 41 verse 10, and there it was. I'll read it out. It says, "So do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand." And there it was. It was, again, you know, another confirmation. Yep, you know, that's exactly what he wants us to feel. That he wants us to know that he's got us. You know, he's got us. I think this was not the only verse, wasn't it? It was another one.
Yeah, and I think it was, we had another verse sent not long after the surgery. Yeah, so one of our life group members sent this verse, also talking about God's mighty right hand from Psalm 44, verse 3. It was not by their sword that they won the land, nor did their arm bring them victory.
Mm.
It was your right hand,
mm.
your arm, and the light of your face, for you loved them.
Mm.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, awesome. That was great.
Yeah. Well, not long after the time when we received the difficult news that my surgery did not fully help, and I was still experiencing the visual impairment, and I felt that I needed a space, a prayer space, a consistent prayer space which I could go to and just, you know, just pray and sit with God, because I just needed it. And do you want to
talk about that time? Yeah, I remember.
Told you about it?
I remember when you mentioned it. I think we were quite inspired by two things.
Mm.
First being the same life group leaders, our ex life group leaders back in Malaysia. For years and years ago, they shifted into where they currently stay, and one of the things that really impressed us was that she had what we called a prayer tower. So it was a dedicated room. There's a small one, you know, where you have to go upstairs to get to.
It was literally a tower because it was right at the top of the house.
It was on top of the house. That's why she called it a prayer tower.
In the roof.
In the roof. None of us have been in this place, but it's where she'd go to pray.
Mm.
And that inspired us, and we always thought, wow, that's great to have some sort of dedicated space. And we never really set anything up like that.
Mm.
I think the other thing that inspired us was that movie, War Room.
The War Room.
Yeah, that's a great movie.
And in fact, that was the last movie I watched before I became visually impaired.
Yeah, it was literally the last movie you watched, because we watched it on the trip back. So when you told me that you wanted a space, a dedicated space to pray, and I remember thinking, well, let's have a look at our closet. So I went into our closet and had a look around, and I remember thinking, oh, I have no idea where we're going to put any of this stuff. How are we going to make any space in here?
Mm.
But yeah, I started pulling things out and just clearing just a small section of the closet and putting a chair in there and clearing at least some space on the wall so that we can stick things up. And just taking all this stuff which I'd cleared out, and everything just seemed so important. It was like, oh, how, where are we going to, what if I needed this? You know, where was this going to go? How am I going to find this now? And I remember taking all that stuff and just putting it into another place. In a cupboard somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the funny thing is that no, I don't think I've ever gone back to that cupboard to look for any of the stuff that I've put in there. It felt really important at the time, but now now we had this prayer space, in the closet that you almost immediately started using.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remembered when you first presented me the space, and I thought, wow, how did you even clear that little corner? And I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
And I remember the very next morning, at about 3 a.m., I woke up and I just felt the need to just sit with God and tell him how I was feeling. And so it's just great that, you know, it was just the closet was just a couple of steps away from the bed, and I literally took my pillow with me into the closet, and I was hugging my pillow,
and I sat
on the chair, and you know, just talking to God and just sitting with Him, and I absolutely love the space.
It's almost like I can't do without now. It's almost like an emergency room, isn't it?
It is like an emergency room.
If hospitals can have an emergency room, I reckon every house should have a spiritual emergency room as well. It's been great, and then I think there's almost a whole message in there, isn't there?
It's like when we
looking back at how important I thought the stuff was, which I had, which I needed to get rid of,
out of sight, out of mind. Now we don't even know what's missing in the closet anymore.
Our lives are a bit like that, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah? Our lives, you know, we have to
clutter. Yeah, clutter just sorts of
there's so much stuff that seems so important, you know. And once you start taking some of that stuff
out, it's not really important, and
start making room for God's space.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that just changes everything.
I think it in the same principle to kind of declutter our lives, our schedule, you know, because we just tend to get so busy. And that aspect of decluttering to make room for God is now a priority for us. It's like non-negotiable. You know, having this prayer closet, it's about a consistent space. I think that was the key thing for us. We've often struggled to find a consistent space. And just having it so close to within the house helps us to run to that space. There's so many times I've just run to the prayer closet when I needed that emergency prayer, you know? I just love the space. So much so that our kids have come in and they've checked out the space and I think I was really touched when Jojo came in one day and she was looking at all the different post-it notes and cards all on the wall, and she said, "Well, Mom, can I write a note and paste it on your wall?" And I said, "Yeah, sure." And so I said, "Yeah, just use one of the post-it notes and write." And then she wrote this, and we still have it on the wall. It says, "Dear Jesus, I just want to thank you for watching over my family and keeping us safe. I'm so thankful for all you do for us." And she has a little emoji tongue sticking out.
Yeah.
And ended off with, "Amen, Jojo." Yeah, it's just awesome. And I think we as parents, you know, we want to inspire our kids as well to learn how to depend on God, especially during times when, you know, we don't even know what the answer is going to be, how long this is going to take. And every day we just take it step by step, every day just leaning on God's grace, which is sufficient for that one day.
That's right.
We really love doing things together, and we share a number of hobbies. So people who know us will know us as a couple who plays a lot of board games.
We have a very large board game collection.
Yes, we do. Is that cluttered, dear?
Well, you
make space. So remember the time we played one of the games, and it actually was hard because when I became visually impaired, we couldn't really play anything. And because I have to see colors, and I couldn't see the board and everything. But there was one particular game where we thought, you know what, I've memorized the layout of the board, and I roughly knew the dice represents what, you know. And so we played that one game when I was visually impaired.
Yeah, I think you won that one.
Oh yeah, I did. I did win.
Beaten by a half blind person on this game. Yeah.
So don't underestimate.
Yeah. I think one of the pearls of wisdom that my mom told me was, when I get married, when I find someone, make sure that it's someone I can share a hobby with. And that's probably very wise. We share a number of hobbies. We love reading and taking walks and playing games together, board games together. And I think that was probably one of the hardest things. It was the cruelest part about the disease. Oh, yeah. We suddenly found out that we couldn't do any of it.
Mm.
Yeah, we couldn't do any of the stuff that we used to do together. And it was important, because you couldn't keep doing, like, you know, thinking about what the next step was going to be in the recovery process, and when the next medical appointment would be, and what's the next course of treatment, and you can't just think about that all the time. The waiting period, you just can't ponder on that all the time. There needed to be something for us to do, and I think one of the things that we discovered was were audiobooks.
Yep.
You know, listening to audiobooks together.
Yep.
And this continued even when I went back to work. I'd listen to a chapter of an audiobook, and on the way to work and on the way back, and Cynthia would, and you would listen to a chapter yourself at home, and then when we got back, and we'd talk about it.
We'd
discuss about wow, you know, did you get this thing out of this chapter? We discovered Watchman Nee. Through these books.
And I think I shared that in the previous episode, that Watchman Nee's books were instrumental in, you know, really speaking into the situation. I just love the way the Holy Spirit use our different personality and our emotions and our experiences to provide different insights. And it's almost like a book club, isn't it? When you come back home and I say, my gosh, did you listen to this chapter? Oh my gosh, we had like a lot of oh my gosh moments. I love how the Holy Spirit provides the insight through your perspective and through my perspective, but somehow it always collates the information, and it's almost like pieces of puzzles, clicking together. It really kept our relationship alive during that crisis.
We shared a lot of powerful moments.
Lot of wow, aha, my gosh, you know, this, we understand, you know, even more. That has been very, very precious to me, and I think and we still continue to listen to some different audiobooks even now.
That's right.
I guess are there any last few things you think we would like to share with our audience?
Even through, you know, even when you're going through such a hard time, and you have all this stuff that's happening around you, I think it was really important to look for moments of joy. To really look out for those moments and give thanks for them, you know. Give thanks for moments of joy. Because they do happen. They do happen. And when you look for them, I remember there was that one time with the phone incident.
You couldn't find your phone.
Couldn't find my phone. I'd gone to sleep and woken up the next morning, and it was stumbling around in the room. It was dark. I couldn't find my phone. It was not in my usual spot, in its usual spot. And I remember waking you up and No,
I was just laughing.
I was like, yeah, I was just you were still asleep, and I'd woken you up because I was stumbling around looking for my phone, saying I can't find my phone.
I said, well, I'm sort of like, you know, impaired, and I can't really exactly try to find where your phone is. I can't remember what we did. Did we try calling you?
Your phone? You told me where the phone was. It was on my desk.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, so I did see it.
No, well, I don't know how you knew it was there, but then...
Oh, maybe I said, you know, did you check
the desk? And there it was. It was on the desk. And we had a good laugh then, because here I was stumbling around, and I had perfect eyesight, and mm-hmm. and I had to have someone who was visually impaired tell me where the phone was.
Yeah.
That's...
Yeah, but it's so important, I think, yeah, that even through, you know, through times of tough times, you're absolutely right. It's just finding those moments of, just laugh it out. You gotta laugh it out.
Yeah. You have to.
Otherwise, you know, man, everything is just so sad all the time. Yeah, there are moments. There are moments like that, isn't it?
Mm.
When you look for them?
Mm.
Mm. Yeah, it's fantastic. So, I guess, anything else you'd like to share?
I just thank God that he's walking through us, you know. He's working through us, and he's walking with us. And, that's just thankful for that every day.
Yeah, I think we've both been very thankful. Considering that, you know, we celebrated our anniversary, and I guess today we woke up just giving thanks, giving praise to a loving, living God. So thank you, dearest, for sharing your reflection on this podcast.
You're welcome.
I hope that it will speak to a lot of people. Okay, thanks.
All right, bye.
I hope you've been inspired by Mum's incredible journey. Please subscribe and share this podcast to people you know who will be encouraged by her story.